every time I do this setup, it is such a headache. I like really need to get longer wires for everything because it's so crammed and it's also so hot, and my computer is like, it sounds like it's taking off, like it's a plane or something. The fan is going like crazy. I just made a video talking about Barbie, more specifically recreating an outfit that is a Barbie outfit. It was a Peaches and Cream 1984 gown, the Barbie release of that year. And I also talked about Billy Boy and Andy Warhol because, you know, they're kind of, well, obviously I'm going to talk about Billy Boy if I'm going to talk about Peaches and Cream Barbie. If you don't know, you can obviously watch my video. It turned out to be quite funny instead of, you know, too heady or a tutorial or something like that. Billy Boy was Andy Warhol's muse, and Andy Warhol wanted to paint Billy Boy, but Billy Boy didn't want his face to be on a painting or anywhere really. I don't know why, because it's not like he wasn't taking pictures or something like that in general. It was just specifically for that. I don't know. But in any case, so he told Warhol that he can paint Barbie because he is basically Barbie, which makes sense considering how obsessed Billy Boy was with Barbie, the fact that he actually created some of the designs for Barbie dolls and had his own designs released as, you know, Barbie releases. They were quite famous as well because of their connection to big designers of the time, most notably Yves Saint Laurent. We kind of talked about that too in that video. But what I wanted to talk about here is Andy Warhol, his connection to icons, his connection to American culture, and also, you know, just overall consumerism, and how closely Warhol was relating his love for capitalism to Barbie's, you know, plastic life, and how much he loves plastic things. Not literally, but you know what I mean. Pop art as a whole is a very, very easy concept, to be honest. It is just lowbrow stuff elevated to highbrow art. There's a few things that Warhol was focusing on. So, for example, you've probably seen the soup cans. I'm not going to get too into it, but I'm going to tell you that it kind of does represent what pop art was all about, by being about the mundane, something that you overlook every single day, an image that is static, the design of a soup can, right? That you see every single day around you, but in many ways don't actually consider its design or its aesthetic qualities, because it's just a thing that you use rather than the thing that you look at. And Warhol was kind of trying to elevate the image that we're very, very familiar with to high art, and then to an image like an icon, right? Because if a soup can is painted in such a way and it is multiplied so much and you see it everywhere, everyone is familiar with it, and with the help of Andy Warhol, it also became a separate thing from just being an object that you use, he kind of transforms it into something iconic in quotations. So pop art in general is a very, very easy art to understand. I think that any person who's trying to get into the arts, especially visual art, the first thing they should probably look at is pop art, because it's kind of like a thing that you understand in, you need like one sentence to really understand the movement. And there's definitely some things that are interesting to discuss about it, but just like I usually say about a lot of art is quite boring after you get what it's all about, technically speaking. There's some art that really speaks to you, and then there's so much art that just kind of makes you feel very bored and makes you question why you even talk about art or why you even pay attention to it. And I think that it's not like Warhol is overall an artist that does not interest me at all. I think that the fact that he kind of made himself into a celebrity figure is interesting. The fact that it was all happening at the beginning of all of this, you know, 15 minutes of fame kind of phenomena. Because he definitely did predict the contemporary relationship between image, popularity, and how short-lived it actually is. or was going to become. I think that we should talk about Marilyn painting, the Marilyn screen print as well. And we'll get to Barbie as we go along, but this one is one of the most famous ones. We're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna spend a lot of time on the basics of what it is about. We're gonna get straight into like more of the meaty stuff. The painting, if you haven't seen it, it uses a lot of gold, a lot of colors that are unnatural. It is kind of a portrait of Marilyn from the 50s that broken down to lines and solid colors instead of, you know, well rendered paint or anything like that. And one of the obvious things when you look at this painting, and I mean, I understand that it's not obvious for everyone, but if you are someone who is of Slavic descent or even Greek, you know, and you have seen Orthodox or Eastern Christian icons, you will definitely know what it alludes to just based on the quality of the paint, the way that it is, or the background of this painting. Even the way that it's applied to the surface reminds me of icons, like religious icons. I'm sure that that was a reference to that. I've heard that people kind of think that because Andy Warhol was very Christian, as it turned out after he died, because people didn't know that. It wasn't like a well-known fact, because he had a very curated image of who he is in the public. Regardless of that, the painting is a very classic pop art kind of look, with also a reference to Orthodox Church and icons and stuff like that. And I always love references to that, because I think that it's not explored enough, in my opinion. Andy made that work after Marilyn died. And Marilyn died in the 60s, so it was a little bit strange that he decided to go for a picture that was taken in the 50s. Again, in many, many analyses, like articles and videos and like talks, a lot of people talk about this work as if Warhol was specifically taking the picture from the 50s because it was like the peak of Marilyn's beauty. And I just don't think that makes any fucking sense, because when she died, she looked exactly the same as she did like 10 years ago or 7 years ago, whatever the hell it was, you know. So I genuinely think that he just picked it because it was quite a popular image, and it was also widely used whenever she was talked about in acting sense, and that was her main job, right? So I don't think, I mean, if he did that because that was peak of her beauty, that just sounds stupid. So if he consciously decided that because of that, congratulations to him. He's a little dumb, but whatever. Like, she literally looks the same. You can't take a picture of someone at the age of 20 and then a picture of someone at the age of 28 and genuinely see a difference. Maybe with some people, but not with Marilyn. Let's be real here, right? That just sounds like nonsense. Anyway, this entire podcast is gonna be in many ways an interpretation and a reaction to a lot of critics and a lot of interviewers who were talking to Warhol at the time, because I'm gonna be honest with you. I watched a few interviews of, you know, that Warhol gave and whatever. He's very difficult to listen to. I'm not gonna lie to you. I really hate when people are slow. And I don't mean that he is slow in a sense of taking his time to really think about his answer. He just looks like he's either high or he's just not paying attention. He's really like bored or whatever, which I think it was his shtick, you know. He kind of decided that it's going to be the way that he was going to answer questions, the way that he was going to behave publicly. It did work for him in terms of cultivating a persona, but is it excruciating to listen to? And I cannot believe that anyone listened to any of his interviews or anything like that before you could control the playback speed. Because, girl, when I tell you that I put it at 2x speed and I wished I could put it on 4x speed, I mean it. It was impossible, genuinely. Like, I don't understand what his problem is. This one interview that I watched was from 1966, I believe. And it was excruciating because he was just so maybe disrespectful. I genuinely don't know how to describe it, because I think about it, like, the interviewer did his homework. You know, he knew the trajectory of Warhol's career, right? So it wasn't like it was an interviewer who didn't know what the fuck they were talking about and Warhol didn't want to engage in it or whatever. No, like the interviewer was engaged, the interviewer knew what he was talking about. Now, there's also another side to it where you could argue that Warhol just didn't want to participate in all this pompous bullshit and like talk about art in this kind of kind of way. But come on, like the entirety of what Warhol is about is celebrity and glamour. He keeps on talking about glamour in fucking every interview you watch or listen to. It's crazy. He definitely has a lot of love for celebrity culture. Yeah, I was just sitting there like, oh my goodness. I wouldn't be able to interview him because I would just leave. I would just get up and get out. Because what do you mean I'm asking you a question and you're just expecting me to fill in the gaps? Like, can you be normal? Just be normal. Can you? Can you be normal? For 1 second. I'm not... Okay, not 1 second. 1 minute. That's all I'm asking for. And the reason why I even wanted to bring up Marilyn's portrait here... it's been talked about to death, so it's not like I wanted to, you know, tell you about this work and enlighten you. But I did want to bring it up to talk about the way that Warhol was creating icons. Not that Marilyn wasn't an icon already, she was. What I mean by that is not specifically the popularity aspect of it or fame, as much as the way that he was flattening an image of a person to become just an image that becomes an icon later. He did that with many things, not just people. It was kind of, you know, his way, I guess, of paying homage to what he loved most, which was money and business. At the very least, that's what he positioned himself to be. Because of course it can be argued that he wasn't as materialistic or as much of a consumerist and capitalist and like a devout capitalist as he portrayed himself to be, based on like what his lovers have said, his like lover, ex-lovers and his friends have said. But I think that he genuinely was into all of that shit. One of the quotes that are quite famous that people kind of bring up a lot when talking about Warhol was what he talked about in his book that was about Andy Warhol's philosophy, where he said making money is art and working is art and good business is the best art. He would be horrified by the sentiments that a lot of people have nowadays. Or maybe he would have found it amusing, I'm not sure. I think the way that he was making icons out of all of those people and objects makes me think about our current culture and the way that celebrity culture is not as effective anymore and not as memorable. The fact that we still talk about Marilyn today, the fact that, you know, there's still videos being made, video essays being made about her, or about media that's made about her, the fact that it's still being made today, after she's been dead for like 60 years, it is quite impressive that people give a fuck for that long, considering how little of a damn people give nowadays about our current celebrities. I feel like celebrities, we talked about, I think that overall, as people on the internet, we talked about the fact that celebrities lost a lot of their allure and a lot of their general attractiveness. And we did talk about the fact that it is partially due to oversaturation, the fact that there's just so many celebrities, micro influencers and such, you know. We also talked about the fact that there's a lot of oversaturation of the same person, of the image of the same person. But I think that looking at how Warhol was creating these images by picking one, breaking it down to its essential lines, filling it with solid colors that don't have dimensionality, and then copying and pasting it, repeating it, reproducing it, it kind of makes me think that maybe the reason why we have a hard time creating images that could be monetized as people becoming celebrity, because celebrity is not, it's very flat concept. You can project whatever you want on those people, right? Oftentimes we do. And I think that because the images that we're seeing now are not as flat as they used to be, that's what's kind of causing this dissonance and creating too much information for the person to be able to project things onto that person. But also, it gives too much variety of interpretations to the point where it does not feel like it's an exact copy and paste situation as it used to be. It used to be that that a lot of people had the same opinion on celebrities, and for long periods of time. We kind of go through the toxic gossip trains all the time. So sorry about that. But I can't stop clowning on Colleen. It's just, I can't stop doing it. It's just so ridiculous what she did. Anyway, but we do go through collective opinions and collective, you know, feelings about a person once in a while. But those opinions oftentimes change collectively once again. And I feel like it used to be that those opinions would be changing a lot less frequently. That's why a scandal would be a lot more significant than nowadays in that sense. Because there was like not as much information available. If you have a scandal available, if there's a new scandal every 20 minutes, each bigger than the last one, you're just not going to remember as many things about people. And I feel like that's the reason why a lot of people who get canceled for really fucked up shit can still come back, because of people just having selective memory loss. And it's just, it's strange, but it is due to oversaturation. And if you think about it, Marilyn was a manufactured icon, both by the studio and Warhol later on. She was obviously an icon for many reasons when it comes to her performance and her looks and her iconic fashion, things like that, right? But it's also important to remember that there were always images that kind of define the decade for the person. The fact that there is a specific art piece about Marilyn that people usually, when they see it, they go, oh, I've seen this before. It's just so widespread. So many people have seen it to the point where it is kind of in our collective subconscious at this point. So having so many, literally thousands of images thrown at you, even of the same person, like right now, if you're watching this and you're not just listening to this, but you're watching it, you're getting thousands of images of me per video, just due to the nature of how, you know, video format works. And I also post a lot more than people used to, you know, share their likeness in filmed and whatever. Like, they would have a film come out and then another one next year or whatever, right? It wasn't a new 20-minute video every week, plus a podcast, plus whatever, right? So an image that you have, for example, of me will never be complete static aesthetic. Because if I was so meticulous that I could curate my image to you, I might occupy like a niche in your brain when it comes to aesthetics, but that would require flattening of my character and of my image. Regardless of what I do, my image is still flattened by being perceived online. However, to both make an impact nowadays and stay interesting to the public, you would have to both curate your image, but also know when to switch it up. So you would really have to forego a lot of your mood, a lot of influences from your personal life, in order to create an image that could become flat enough to become more of a well-known image, to become more of an icon. Nowadays, when something becomes truly massive as an image, oftentimes people will not recognize the person if they are not presented in exact same concept, exact same context, framing, outfit, everything. The example that kind of came to mind right now is this guy from SHINee. I'm not really like that familiar with all the SHINee members, but there's this guy who went viral on Twitter. Everybody fucking knew that reaction meme. It was a picture of a guy putting on a clown costume. He was sitting in front of the mirror, you know, like putting on an entire costume, makeup done, putting on a wig and everything. And I would say that most people wouldn't know that it's the same guy as that guy from Shinee. A lot of people don't even know, at least in the West, who the fuck Shinee is. It is just very interesting that this image of him and the image of him as a performer, as an idol, are so separate unless you've been following his career closely. Because many people, even people who do know about Shinee, wouldn't know that it's the same person. I just noticed that that happens a lot with many creators, where changing something immediately makes people feel like they are not familiar with you anymore. Things that change, usually done either incrementally or they're done in a way that makes sense because it is a trend. So you will be watching a person because, for example, a specific aesthetic became popular, like very popular, like for example clean girl or some shit like that, and you find a few creators who fit that aesthetic, and then another aesthetic becomes popular, they might switch it up because they're also, you know, influenced by what is popular, but it's not going to be truly memorable. And I think that that's all due to the fact that there is no facilitator like Andy Warhol, who created this flat image, and then he also had fame and money and notoriety in the art world to get attention for painting something in general. So you kind of get this weird relationship where, technically speaking, we do have people becoming famous for, you know, for 15 minutes the way that Warhol predicted. But at the same time, we have kind of created this weird amnesia effect where if the person is not unique enough in their, like, in the way that they portray themselves, we don't remember them. And if someone doesn't flatten their image for us, we can't even remember them too. Like, for example, with anything that you produce, if you're in creative field, you have encountered this problem of realizing that you have to reference things that people already know in order to describe something that you've made, or in order to name something. Like, it could be a YouTube video, it could be an album cover and name, it could be a book, you know, it could be literally anything. And if you don't use a few keywords that the general public is familiar enough with to feel like that rings a bell for them, you're not gonna get anyone engaging with it at all. But at the same time, if you go too far and you create something and you name something with a combination of keywords that are kind of stale to people, you're not gonna get anyone interested in your work either. It seems like it's kind of the exact same process, conceptually speaking, as Warhol creating his paintings or his screen prints that became icons, like the Coca-Cola painting or print, like the Marilyn one, like the Barbie one, all of them. It seems like the visual language that he was creating was taking something that was already familiar to people, enough for them to engage with it, but presenting an idea that is not technically stale yet. I would argue that if you make artworks like Warhol nowadays, if your work is taking a basic object, painting it, and repainting it over and over and over again or whatever, it's not going to conceptually work because it's been done to death at this point. I think that I need to make a whole episode just talking about why just making a thing that someone else made doesn't really work in terms of making the art world interested in your works. Because I think that I hear, you know, a lot of the time I hear people looking at abstract work and being like, oh, I could paint that. And it's like, yeah, maybe you could, honestly. Sometimes there are things that are unique about those works, visually speaking, in terms of the specific colors or the way that, like, the type of design criteria that the artist was using. You know, obviously there is a lot of different variations of art, even within one movement. But I think that it's so important to think about why is it not working if you just come into the room, take a piece of canvas and paint black square. Why wouldn't you be as revered as Malevich. Why not, right? I think I need to do a whole other episode speaking on this, because I think that people oftentimes don't really understand why people even put things in galleries. And honestly, most of the time it's just related to privilege, money, stealing shit from others and other things like that. Honestly, like, I'm going to be honest with you. The reason why a lot of artists are in the galleries is because they were privileged in one way or another. But the ideas are usually, they were usually collective ideas. The movements were movements because ideas kind of spread and sprung in multiple places at the same time. When Warhol was working with these ideals, and while he was working with celebrities and stuff like that, it was just not as stale as it is now. The context is just way too different for it to work in any shape or form. I would love for us to have more art critics around, like contemporary art critics, that are talked about more widely instead of it being just like a very quiet kind of thing. Because I feel like, maybe I'm wrong because I wasn't alive back then, but I feel like because of artists that were kind of celebrity adjacent, there was a lot more discourse that was a lot more public. Obviously there were academic papers, but I feel like there was more going on in terms of interesting papers being written. I feel like right now there's a lot of reiteration going on to the point where it's just annoying. There's a lot of, for example, articles and essays being written about queerness, and all of those things have already been discussed at length. Oftentimes they are kind of an extension or a comment on a previous essay, but they don't actually add anything. It's kind of crazy that there's so much we could talk about, so much. Because I think that there's still some new shit that we can talk about. I can't think right now, honestly. Like, my brain is melting. I hope this is going to be coherent when I'm going to be editing this. Because, girl, even though I have notes, my brain is soupy. It's so soupy. Because it's just too hot and muggy, you know? Ugh. What I was trying to say with all that is that all these flashing images that we get per day that are not the same image anymore, the way that, you know, there was one image that would constantly get reprinted in a bunch of newspapers, journals, whatever. We oftentimes have tons of images every single day, of even the same event from all different angles. That created the difficulty of creating flat images that could be easily reproduced and distributed, that led to the death of the icon. If you know what I mean, expand on it, because I want to chat about it. This is definitely the reason why a lot of YouTube videos look very stale now, even if they're not in terms of what is actually in the video, which is honestly kind of like 90% the case, but the ratio is a lot better than with thumbnails and titles, right? Because oftentimes people need to use things that perform better, things that reference things that are more popular. I oftentimes have to kind of make videos on topics that are way, way over and done for me, just because that's the only thing that would actually perform well and give me the platform, the video that actually would be seen by people in general because they would click on it, to talk more in depth about some other topics. Because oftentimes I kind of have to figure out how I can flatten the idea that I actually want to talk about in the video and make it easily consumable in terms of thumbnail and title, so people would even click on it. Because if you go way too specific, or you talk about things that you actually want to talk about, especially in fields that you have heard everything about everything, maybe not everything, okay, but a lot of things are kind of unimpressive within your field if you've heard a lot of things and you learned a lot about it. I think that it's probably an issue for many YouTubers. I don't think it's like my issue in particular, but I definitely see a lot of people making videos on the same topics 2 months after me, 3 months after me, that actually perform better because I was a bit too early. And even though I'm trying to, you know, kind of balance this whole thing, because I do want it to be profitable for me so I could continue on doing it. I definitely am always a little bit too early on stuff, and sometimes I cave and I do things that are kind of over and done in my mind and kind of not interesting for me to discuss anymore, just because I need my channel to still be in the zeitgeist, you know. I still want it to be recommended and other things like that. And I think it's very similar in other fields. I think that if you are in music, for example, if you are not presenting things in the right way, oftentimes a lot of people that would actually enjoy your album, they might not listen to it. If you choose the wrong lead single, sometimes people are not even going to check out the rest of the album because you just chose the wrong thing to get people hooked. There's another thing that I wanted to chat about when it comes to Warhol, and that is the fact that he actually was shot by a woman who thought that he was stealing her ideas. It turned out that she was had schizophrenia or something like that. I am not entirely sure about how much of this is true, how much of it isn't true, because to be honest, I just don't know. Considering how much Warhol absolutely worshipped capitalism and business over art and stuff like that, I think I just don't know if I trust this whole framing 100%. But I do think that woman, like, she was quite extreme, so maybe she just came up with all of that. I don't think that that's not plausible or something like that. But I think that it's quite interesting that he was actually pronounced dead at the hospital, and that was in 1968, and he lived for like almost 20 years more after that. So he was pronounced dead, and then he was resuscitated by medics who resumed their efforts once told who he was. I'm not gonna lie to you, when I read that, this is literally what it was written as. I'm reading a quote, which was, Andy was pronounced dead in hospital, but resuscitated by medics who resumed their efforts once told who he was. Just the fact that they resumed working, resumed trying to resuscitate him after they figured out that he's like a famous artist, is just so bizarre to me. Like, because he lived. They pronounced him dead, and he lived, so they could have saved him. And it's just so gross to me that they wouldn't have continued on trying if he wasn't famous and rich. I mentioned that I was watching an interview with Andy and how like ridiculous that interview was and how uncomfortable the conversation between the interviewer and Andy was, because they were not, I don't know, he wasn't really participating. And it's like, if you don't want to have an interview, if you don't want to be interviewed, just don't be. Like, you don't have to do that. I don't know. So I found that a little bit annoying. And then I saw comments under that video. One of them was, Andy Warhol is an insanely relatable guy. Huh? That makes no fucking sense. I mean, what about Andy Warhol is so relatable to you? Girl, what do you mean? I just honestly don't understand. Anyway, the next one, also another comment that I thought was kind of funny, was, just imagine if Andy lived in our internet era. He would be delighted with the possibilities. I can't even imagine what kind of sick, amazing stuff he would do. P.S. I even think that he would use a bunch of social networks. Imagine stumbling on a very weird TikTok with random celebrities authored by Warhol. Surrealistic, huh? No. Paracosm 8977. No, it wouldn't be surrealistic. It's just so funny, because the reason why it wouldn't be anything special is because videos like that, very abstract, weird, a little bit creepy videos, are made daily on the internet. Open TikTok, and if you scroll long enough, you're gonna come across a bunch of weird ass videos. You would come across that video of that girl who makes kind of game looking videos where it's kind of a horror-esque vibe with the sharpness of the video all the way up, kind of a little bit nostalgic, creepy. She speaks with, like, you know, like her mouth just like opens and closes with it's just basically an image, you know, two images switching between each other instead of usual amount of frames per second. Or what about that girl Poppy? Remember when her and that guy who like definitely wasn't like, you know what, he's like, I'm sure if I would have met him, he'd be the guy who would try so hard to come off as Warhol-esque as possible. Like, you can tell that he's like just hoping that someone's gonna look at him and be like, oh, he's like so Warhol. But regardless of that, Poppy exists. That was fun when it was, you know, at its prime, and when nobody knew whether they were serious or not, who the hell this girl is and why, while she's saying like pretty normal things in a bit of a creepy way. She gets like a nosebleed or something like that. Like, what the fuck that's happening? Or remember that Lonely Girl 15 shit? Like, that was the first vlog style shit. And I'm sure this guy probably didn't even watch any of that because he's so obsessed with the cult of Warhol, right? And that's just what happens when you flatten an image well enough, which Warhol definitely did, because he has spent most of his life flattening his image as much as possible. He might have been a very flat person in general. Maybe that's the case. But I genuinely think that it was just more possible to curate your image at the time, because he wasn't randomly filmed all the time. He wasn't filmed with 4K quality, with the microphone picking up anything and everything he says, where he would have to constantly control what he's saying and trying to fit it into a specific image in order for him to be a flat enough image for people to consume his art easily. Because nowadays, no matter what kind of look you're trying to go for, no matter what kind of image you're trying to go for, there's someone who's going to come up to you on the streets and just start filming you like a zoo animal, you know? And no matter what you were doing, whether you were having a weird interaction with someone, or you were having a bad day, or you just stumbled out of a hospital because you had some kind of terrible accident and you're going home after, you know, being patched up or whatever, people are going to see you in so many different states where you wouldn't be able to even pull yourself together for an interview, because it's not an interview. People just pull their cameras out and start filming you whenever and wherever. And it's happening kind of 24/7, to be honest. That's what I wanted to say about Warhol and pop art, flatness, celebrity. And also the fact that Billy Boy was fucking, 32 years younger than Warhol and they were lovers creeps me the fuck out. Billy Boy, what the fuck was going on, boy? Like, he was a boy. Warhol, what was going on? I don't like this. It's kind of iconic that Barbie had a Warhol portrait, which, I mean, Billy Boy had it, but you know what I mean. And that it was Peaches and Cream Barbie, the one that I recreated in my video. And the fact that that was his last painting. That was his last portrait. Barbie really has some crazy lore, honestly. This was very art heavy today and very pop art heavy. I was kind of hoping to mix it up a little bit and talk about the new Lana Del Rey album. I mean, it's not new anymore because I've been filming this, you know, accumulating it over time because I wanted to be more of a constant schedule for you guys when I premiere the second season. I don't want it to be all over the place anymore. I don't like that. So it's not a new album, but whatever. I just want to talk about Lana's album and we can talk about that next time. Tell me what you think about it. I'll also have my assistant on the pod. We're gonna talk about our experience in university, in art schools, in fashion schools, like fashion design and all that kind of good stuff. I'll see you soon. I'll talk to you soon. And I hope you're having a good day. Bye.